Welcome to the Archives of Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Our guest in this program is Dr. David Kiersey, the author of Presidential Temperament. Dr. Kiersey took the Myers-Briggs temperament inventories and developed what has come to be known as the Kiersey Temperament Sorter to establish and identify character and temperament personality types. In his other book, Please Understand Me, the reader may take the Kiersey Temperament Sorter test and get an idea of his or her personality and temperament styles. Using his method, history, and experience, Dr. Kiersey has examined the people who have become a president of the United States and presents his analysis in Presidential Temperaments. In this program, originally broadcast in November of 1993, when Radio Curious was called Government Politics and Ideas, we talk about presidential temperament and the temperaments of some of the former United States presidents and how they have participated in our history. They, the temperaments, they, the presidents. Dr. David Kiersey, welcome to Government Politics and Ideas.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be aboard.
Thanks for being with us this evening. In your book, Presidential Temperaments, you seek to demonstrate the power of temperament and character to explain events. Can you give a little bit of background about how you developed the book?
Well, I suppose I ought to start with the theory, temperament theory. First of all, it's very, very old. It's over 2,000 years old. An idea of Hippocrates said there are four kinds of people, four temperaments, the inborn that develop into four characters. And what I and my partner, Ray Choinier, did is to try to, as you said, demonstrate the power of this Hippocratic theory to explain situations and events. And we decided to study the four presidents, 40 presidents, and figure out what kind of character each of them had, and then look at their lives, not just their political lives, but their whole lives, and use temperament theory to explain what they actually did.
Well, maybe in tonight's talk we could identify some of the presidents and use that as a departure point to explain your temperament theory. We were talking earlier about the group that you call the Rationals. Could you tell us about the Rationals and who some of the presidents were and what that temperament characteristic is?
Okay, first, what is the pattern of their behavior? They're, in their general outlook, they're skeptical. And they're the pragmatists. They are proud of their competencies. They respect themselves in the degree that they're autonomous, and they are self-confident in the degree that they're efficient. They look for puzzles to solve. They need to achieve. They want to be knowledgeable. They're the logical ones. Probably the most important thing to understand about the Rationals is the kind of ability they have. They are the strategists. They are interested in the sciences and technologies and in systems.
And who
analysis is their forte.
Who are the Rationals who have been president?
Well, of the 40 presidents, we found only eight. And four of those, the two Adamses, John and John Quincy, and Madison and Jefferson, were the founding fathers. So that the other four were few and far between. The two during the 19th century were Lincoln and Grant, and the only two in the 20th century were Hoover and Eisenhower. So that once the nation was founded, the rationals sort of disappeared. They really aren't interested in government or in politics. They're mainly interested in science and technology, so it's understandable that after the Founding Fathers designed the nation, the only time we ever got more rationals in office was commanding generals, and I mean commanding generals, generals of the army, not just generals of brigades or divisions.
Well, we have two of them, Eisenhower and Grant. Can you tell us about the comparisons and the differences between those two presidents?
Very little difference. They were both strategic geniuses. Grant, with considerable help from Lincoln, won the Civil War single-handedly because of his strategic genius. Eisenhower, also a strategic genius, was elevated to his command during World War II by Marshall, George Marshall, another rational, by the way, precisely because he was so far-seeing, and his strategy was worldwide, whereas other generals who were not of that same caliber. The two of them acted very much alike even when they became presidents. So that is to say, they saw the presidency not as a legislative job, but as an executive job. And so when they became presidents, they looked rather lackluster because their job, they said, and they believed firmly, was to execute the laws of the nation that were enacted by the legislature. They didn't see their job as doing anything other than executing the laws. They were executives, and that's what they had been as commanders of armies, and they did the same thing when they became presidents.
Let's talk for a minute about one of the other groups that you call the artisans. Mm-hmm. And we've identified, or you have identified in that group, Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton as more current 20th century presidents. Tell us a little bit about their character and temperament makeup.
Okay. The artisan is, in a sense, like the rational in that they're interested in getting things done any old way that you can do it. They are not not as moralistic as the guardians and idealists, which we will discuss down the line. But these people are the eternal optimists. They're hedonists, meaning they like to have fun. They can be cynical. They're very competitive, very daring, confident of themselves when they're effective, very adventurous. They like to impress people. They believe in luck. They enjoy being excited much more than the other types. They're impulsive, make good hunters. To be virtuosos.
Let's be president-specific here, if we can.
Let me say something more about the most important thing about them is their ability, which is tactical instead of strategic. There's a very important distinction between tactics and strategy. For example, you see that difference between tactics and strategy in comparing Grant as a strategist with Lee as a tactician, and the corresponding results. So the most important thing to understand about artisans is that they are tactically intelligent, and that has made an enormous difference in their presidential conduct. Now, you were asking me about who?
Yeah, I thought we could be presidential specific here and talk about some of the specifics in the artisan presidents. Both Roosevelts, Kennedy, Johnson, Reagan.
Yeah. Well, let me say first that we've had 12 of them. The first one was Andy Jackson, a very famous man who had over 100 duels, and he survived them all. Garfield, a great speaker. But the two Roosevelts, John Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, are probably more interesting to people nowadays, and of course Reagan. So that in the 20th century we've had Teddy Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, John Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, and Ronald Reagan, and now Clinton. Clinton, in my view, and I've been watching him ever since he started running for presidents, for a presidency, I was ambivalent about whether he was more like Reagan or more like Kennedy. But recently, watching him very carefully, watching his gestures, watching the way he talks, I believe firmly now that he is cut from the same cloth as John Kennedy, Franklin Roosevelt, and Teddy Roosevelt, and Lyndon Johnson. He is a fox. Very, very clever. Very articulate. Very brilliant tactician. Not a strategist. Not a moralist.
Let's talk for a minute about what you look at when you observe someone like Bill Clinton and come to the conclusions that you just gave us.
Well, as a tactician, the tactician is a person who looks for opportunities. He's an opportunist. And Bill Clinton is very, very conscious of what is going on right now, and does not seem terribly concerned about what will happen 10 years from now or what will happen abroad. And when I look at a person, any person, I listen to what he says and how he says it. And if you care to watch Bill Clinton perform, you'll notice, first of all, he is an extremely able performer, just like Ronald Reagan. And you will notice something else about his rhetoric and his gestures. He has exactly the same gestures as John Kennedy does. For example, he uses the index finger. He puts his thumb against his index finger and sort of pecks at the audience. Remember Kennedy's speech, "Ask not what you can get from your country, but what you can give your country," something like that. He had that index finger out there sort of pecking. And he also used the artisan fist to make a point. I really can't get into the kind of language that the artisans use. That's very, very complicated, but it is quite distinctive. The way artisans talk is very, very different from the way guardians talk and the way rationals talk. It's very, very descriptive, colorful language. Lots of metaphors, concrete metaphors, though. I look for concreteness in artisans, rather than the abstractness that you see in the rationals.
Let me take a moment here and say that my guest is Dr. David Kiersey, the author of a recently published book called Presidential Temperament, as well as the author of a book entitled Please Understand Me that has sold well over a million copies that helped the reader to understand individual character and temperament. You're listening to Government Politics and Ideas, and my name is Barry Vogel. David Kiersey, tell us a little bit about the Guardian temperament, Washington and Truman, and how that affects the well-being of our nation.
Yes, the Guardians stand guard. They guard against people doing things they shouldn't, and they stand guard over people's needs. And, of course, the most famous one was George Washington, the father of our nation, who was at one time a general, really saved us from the British, owing to his guardian-like generalship, which amounted to keeping his army together and staying out of battles. If he had gone to battle like an artisan, we would not be this nation now. But he really saved our nations by the way he acted as a general and by the way he acted as president. He oversaw the disputes of those hot-headed rationals who were trying to design the nation. I'm talking about the Adamses and Hamilton and Jefferson and Madison. Anyway, these people stand guard, and that's why I call them guardians. Half of our presidents were guardians. That's 20 of them, from George Washington to George Bush. And what are they like? Well, they're pessimistic instead of optimistic, stoic. Their abilities are logistical. That is, they know how and seek to learn how to get the right supplies to the right people at the right time and place. That's what logistics is. And they're very good with regulations, standards, and the maintenance. So I don't think it's a surprise that half of our presidents would be like that. You ask about...
Let me ask you something here about half of the presidents being guardians. Is half of the population also a guardian?
Close to it. I figure about at least 45% of the population are guardians. And the other, 40% are artisans. That leaves only 15% for the abstract people, like the idealists and rationals.
When we trace the background...
The guardians before yeah. we leave them, though, it's, I think, very important. Washington established the nation. When it's true that... Jefferson bought the northwest part of the nation, but it's also true, and this may not be understood by many, that that Polk, who was a guardian, just like Washington and Truman, provoked the Mexican government into attacking America on the border, and of course then conquered Mexico, and the result was that he annexed the entire Southwest, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California. I mean, a huge, huge, a quarter of our nation was gotten by a guardian, and this is a very important thing that it took a guardian to make our nation about twice as big as it was.
Well, are you indicating that that's unusual behavior for a guardian?
No. Acquisition of territory is the usual behavior of guardians. See, even McKinley, another guardian, was responsible for annexing the Philippines, Hawaii, Cuba, Puerto Rico, Guam. So we got our island possessions by dint of the efforts of another guardian. Guardians are very acquisitive. Property is very important to them.
When
Washington was a millionaire, owing to his acquisitions of enormous tracts of land.
When we trace the origins of temperament and character, do you find it to be genetic or sociological and environmental?
Well, I believe that that temperament is genetic. The temperament is what we're born with. That's our body, our constitution. But that constitution of that body, that configuration of physique and inclination, has to be reared in a social environment, and it's when our temperament comes up against a social environment that we develop what I call character. Character is a pattern of habits, a lifelong pattern of habits. But you aren't born with your habits. You have to get those interacting with your family and friends and neighbors and enemies and bosses and so on. So temperament you're born with, character you acquire by behaving in a social environment.
Well, Dr. Kiersey, in taking your background as a psychologist who has studied character and temperament, it seems like it's an enormous project to move into the realm of history. Why is this something that you wanted to do?
It's a challenge to give a reasonable or rational account of human conduct in the real world. For example, I'm contemplating right now writing a book with my partner Chaunier on the generalship and the generals of the Civil War, explaining how that war was conducted, and entirely determined, in my view, by the character of the generals that ended up with armies and corps and regiments and divisions and battalions and so on. Why did I do it? Well, I like to demonstrate the power of the idea that there are four kinds of people.
In preparing this book, did you place any limits on your work, editorial or political, of that nature?
I don't know what you mean.
Well, when you were gathering the final copy and creating the final copy for Presidential Temperaments, what kind of limits, if any, did you place on what you prepared?
Well, if you mean did we worry about differences in political persuasion, yes, we worried a lot because of the different political persuasions. Those people who are heavily persuaded in one direction, say toward equality rather than freedom, when they attack, they will attack a libertarian or a freedom-oriented president viciously and cut him to shreds, and vice versa. People with different persuasions, liberal, conservative, egalitarian, or individualist, there are hundreds of books which just cut the poor presidents to little pieces, and they're called everything in imaginable, crooks and savages and so on, and we tried to steer clear of that, the enormous bias that exists in literally hundreds of books on the presidents. That was the limitation that we put on. We tried to be as nice as we could in depicting these people. They're good people. They're able people. They're, in most cases, very competent and very conscientious.
I've tried to characterize your other well-known book, Please Understand Me, and I wonder if you could add in a minute or so a little bit about that book and why it's so interesting to so many readers.
I think the major reason that it interests so many people is that it's positive, all positive. It says everybody's okay, everybody has certain kinds of abilities that the others have less of. Everybody is useful to society if they find their niche. And most of all, it helps spouses understand each other so that they don't engage in what I call the Pygmalion Project. The Pygmalion Project is that undertaking which mates engage in when they get married. Each of them takes the marriage license as a license to reshape their spouse into their own image. That's what Pygmalion did. Remember the movie My Fair Lady? That's what Henry Higgins did to Liza Doolittle. And I think that the major power of the book is to say to mates and to parents, don't try to chisel your offspring or your mate into your own image. You won't like the result if you get it, but you're not going to get it. All you're going to do is antagonize and irritate your mate, and the results are awful. So,
Dr. Kiersey, I think that book is a program in itself, but before we close in the remaining 60 seconds that we have, I'd like to ask you the question I always like to close with, and that is, have you read any interesting books lately?
Sure. I have about a dozen books everywhere strewn around me, and I pick up one and read for a while. Yesterday I finished a book titled The Killer Angels, which is what the movie Gettysburg was founded on. Fascinating book. Of course, my favorite books are the Hornblower series, about Horatio Hornblower and his escapades as a captain in the British Navy during the Napoleonic Wars.
Well, Dr. David Kiersey, I want to thank you very much for being with us here on Government, Politics, and Ideas.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Dr. David Kiersey is the author of Presidential Temperament and Please Understand Me. The books he recommends are The Killer Angels by Michael Shira and The Hornblower Series by Horatio Hornblower. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. They're also available in CD format for $10 each. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org. You've been listening to the archives of Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.